In the corner, Marchessault up to the slot. Miller shooting. Knocked down and trickles into the goal. To rush up the left side. Nosek is in. He shoots and scores. Tomáš Nosek. On the right side wall, tipped out. Here's Carlson. He's got an unabetted path. Left circle. Carlson alone. He scores! All through his legs! Carlson! Shorthanded! 3-2 Knights! Oh, can you believe it? Faceoff won by Belmar. Puck to the corner. Cleared out of the zone. And that's it! The Knights win the Pacific Division in their inaugural season.
And welcome in and good 4th of July, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for the Golden Knights in Las Vegas. Full studio today, Frank Harnish, Clayton Hamilton, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman, and lots to get to here, guys, because a development camp is wrapped up. Free agent signing period is starting. There's still a lot of questions about where some guys are going to go. Still need to sign some other youngsters. You just heard William Carlson there. I'm curious to see what he's going to end up getting from the Golden Knights. So a lot to get to. And full disclosure, want to bring this off right off the bat. We hope you have a great 4th of July, a happy, healthy, safe 4th of July, but we are actually recording this on Tuesday morning because we are also off for the 4th of July. So if something big breaks, if Erik Karlsson ends up going someplace and you're wondering, how are those idiots not talking about it? Well, because when we're recording this, it didn't happen yet.
It hadn't happened yet. Erik Karlsson still safe and sound in Ottawa. But I feel like, Frank, with the draft being over, development camp over, the start of free agency, we finally turned the page, and now we are officially in year number two.
Well, my guess is, one, we are idiots, and I don't know if he's safe and sound in Ottawa because that's not necessarily the best situation for Erik Karlsson to be in, I don't think. I think he's looking for sunnier pastures. Maybe Vegas is a great opportunity for Erik Karlsson to blossom once again into a fantastic defenseman.
And also big news out of Ottawa's that they disclosed that they are allowing him to talk to other teams about an extension, so it seems as if a move will be imminent.
Well, if you're Ottawa, and I know that they have made massive, massive mistakes up there in the last season or two, but you would have to be complete idiots to not allow him to talk to somebody else, because why would you risk the fact? I mean, we know that they've offered him a contract. It's something to, in my opinion, to appease the fan base out there, because he doesn't want to stay there. Why would he want to stay there? The team is in complete disarray. It's a shambles. It's a joke right now. And if he does stay there and play out next year, they could end up getting nothing for him. If he can find a place where he's happy and they can work a deal with the team, you can't let a player like Erik Karlsson go and get nothing for him.
Yeah, just a cursory offer. You have to do that so that you can save face with your fan base. It's like when you go to a company meeting and they offer up for suggestions, and they know that no one's going to give a suggestion, but they just say that so that they can tell you, hey, we gave you an opportunity to make things better. You didn't. And I think it's the same way with Ottawa. They're saying, hey, We want to give him an opportunity. We want him back, and it's going to be all on Erik Karlsson if he decides not to come back.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Pierre Dorion, I understand that at the trade deadline was probably the best opportunity to get the most you possibly could for Erik Karlsson while shedding Bobby Ryan's contract. Now, if you have to appease your fans to the point where you say, we're going to give him an offer on July 1st because that's what we said we're going to do, and we're going to bypass all of these moments where we could possibly get more value out of trading Erik Karlsson just to give him an offer that's laughable at best. What's the point? Like, what's the point? I don't get it. Like, if the offer was dowdy money, then okay, fine. You're at least trying to make it appear as if you're doing right by Erik Karlsson. But 8 years, $80 million? That's not even close to an actual offer that Carlson's going to entertain. Like, there's no point. And now you've taken yourself out of a position where you can actually bring in more value because you waited to tender this crap offer.
And it's curious, too, because I'm wondering what exactly is Ottawa asking for, and what can they realistically get at this point? Because, like, when you just said the trade deadline, Ryan, before the trade deadline, Ottawa had everything in their favor. They didn't have the whole fiasco with Carlson and his teammate in the locker room, who has since left ways. They didn't have the sexual assault charges from a person up in their front office. They were kind of a laughingstock, but not completely. We didn't know the whole picture right now. Right now, they have basically no leverage. You've got to get something, or at least the leverage they have is far less than it was. I'm just not sure if they're aware of that.
And the thing is, they have more leverage today than they will at the trade deadline coming up this year, because you'll get Erik Karlsson for, you know, an extra, you know, 55, 60 games. So every day that it ticks away after the beginning of the season is less and less leverage.
Pierre Dorion said that they weren't in a rush. They have until October 4th. Like, we don't play until October 4th, so what's the rush, right? Well, if you play on October 4th with Erik Karlsson in your lineup and you're the Ottawa Senators, be prepared to lose him for nothing, because no team in their right mind is going to go into the season thinking that they're going to give up anything close to what they would give up now to acquire Karlsson at the deadline. And if you're not willing to accept what you have right now, you weren't willing to accept it at the deadline, which was up to six pieces, and now we're in the ballpark probably of about four, maybe five pieces, and some of those pieces are going to be picks, not necessarily going to be roster players or prospects. You're basically, you're putting yourself in a position where if you don't get a deal done before the season starts, I don't think Erik Karlsson moves at the deadline, because no one's going to pay you anything for him, and you're going to lose him for nothing, just like the Islanders lost John Tavares.
And again, to make that point even more, both of your guys' points saying that every day it lessens, and talking about trade deadline on October 4th, and that not only that, but if Bobby Ryan is truly also a piece of that, the longer you wait, the longer other teams might already have their salary happen, going, well, we don't know if this is going to work out or not, so we're going to get this guy or something else, or give somebody else a raise. The more teams that put themselves out of that because of the salary cap and everything else, the less options you have for trade options, and the stronger it makes a Vegas Golden Knights or somebody else that might still be in the sweepstakes available to make a trade. And if you got Karlsson, let's say that they went all the way to the trade deadline and they finally got something and they got something for him. At that point, Bobby Ryan's probably not going to be part of the deal, and you're still going to be saddled with his contract. So it lessens every time, because it's not just Erik Karlsson they're trying to get rid of.
Right, and the one difference being between John Tavares is I think the Islanders really felt that they were a part of the sweepstakes, that they could re-sign him, so they held on to him, even though that they weren't necessarily in a playoff position, thinking that they could re-sign him, ended up getting nothing. I think Ottawa's probably not going to be in that situation where they feel like they're a playoff team going to make a run. They don't feel like they can re-sign him, so they probably will move him at the deadline, but like you guys said, it's going to be at a much decreased bargain basement price.
I completely agree with that when it comes to John Tavares. However, if I'm Gar Snow at the trade deadline, if I don't have an extension in place with John Tavares, I move him for something, because you know what? You can always make the pitch in the offseason. Assuming that John Tavares doesn't go to a team, falls in love with it for 2 months, and then signs an extension before he gets to free agency. But I really, really believe that John Tavares was set on going to market regardless of what happened at the trade deadline. So I really don't understand that line of thinking when you say, you know what? We've got a guy who is unwilling to sign an extension with us right now, so we need to get rid of him. We have to get something for nothing, because now you look at the Islanders and you look at what they've done reactionary to losing John Tavares, and if you think Leo Komarov and Tom Kunockel are the answers, it's not going to be very good for the Islanders when you consider what they possibly could have gotten at the deadline to mitigate some of the loss.
And we saw that strategy with Montreal and Max Pacioretty. They move him at the deadline and then re-sign him.
All right, and we're going to get into Tavares and all the other guys and the other free agents, but right off the bat, we said that we were going to talk about the Golden Knights. So let's kind of get back on that track a little bit here. And Paul Stastny, the big name that they did sign. A solid player, a little bit older, but they got the terms that George McPhee wanted, because McPhee doesn't want to necessarily give long-term contracts to some older players. In fact, McPhee addressed that recently with the media.
You know, a couple of summers ago, we had a lot of older guys getting 5 and 6 year deals, and I think everybody realized it was a mistake. And so we're trying to be a little more circumspect, and it looks like the league is trying to do that. So that's where we are with. That's why we went 3 years on Stastny, and Reeves was 2 years, and we basically, you know, there's a lot of interest in him, and a lot of competition for him, and some three-year deals, and we simply took the money from a three-year deal and pushed it into 2 years. And so to answer your question, we're okay giving term to younger guys. With older guys, you got to be careful.
And there's George McPhee talking about some of those contracts and that, because I know, I'm sure that you guys have had the same questions asked for you on social media and different things, and when you're out and amongst the public and that, because I've had some people asking me, well, wait a second, why did we sign Stastny for more money than Neil or Perron were getting, and yet two of the guys that we kind of love are already gone? Well, Neil and Perron wanted a little bit longer-term contract than the Golden Knights wanted to give, and that was part of the reason.
Yeah, I mean, you look at David Perron and the deal that he signed was four years, $4 million per, so $16 million contract. Really not that crazy when it comes to term, or when it comes to money. But do you believe David Perron will be a very good player in year four? I don't. I think David Perron's probably got 2 to 3 years where he's really effective at $4 million, and then after that it's going to taper off or trail off, and I don't know that he's going to be a solid option for your fourth line. So I agree with George McPhee there. And then you look at, you know, James Neal, who signed a five-year deal. James Neal's got a lot of mileage on his legs. He's not getting any faster. He's not getting any younger. And you've got a bunch of young guys in your system that in 2 or 3 years are going to be competing for those spots that James Neal and David Perron occupy currently. So it makes sense that if you want a guy for 2 or 3 years like Paul Stastny, you get him there as a stopgap for the Cody Glass, for the Nick Suzuki. And it allows you potentially to figure out what it is you have in Eric Halla. Because I'm not sure that the Golden Knights are sold on Eric Halla as a 2C, as a true center of a top six center. So is he a top six winger? Probably. Could he score more goals on the wing if he's playing with a playmaker like Paul Stastny? Maybe. It's possible. However, if it doesn't work out with Halla on the wing, you now have the ability to move maybe Cody Eakin around to a wing, or to slot Halla in as a third line center. If he's playing a third line center, if you look at that depth, you've got Carlson, you've got Stastny, and you've got Halla. That's really good down the middle, especially when you throw in Belmar, Eakin, potentially on a fourth line. That's fantastic center depth. Yeah, it really is.
And George McPhee certainly talked about that. First of all, I want to correct myself. I said Max Pacioretty. I meant Thomas Plekanec.
Yes.
With Montreal. He went to the Maple Leafs, and then he came back and signed. So my mistake on that. Sorry, it was Thomas Plekanec, not Max Pacioretty. But one of the things that the George McPhee talked about, he did talk about that term is more important than money. Mm-hmm. And it's just what you had said, that you've got these guys like Cody Glass, like Nick Suzuki, like Eric Brännström that are going to be ready at a certain point, and you don't want to be tied up with too many roster spots and with too much money. And we look at what we did with Ryan Reeves. I mean, they basically played Ryan Reeves' three-year salary in two,
right,
to get him to come back because they may need that roster spot. And then George McPhee went on to continue and say that he likes having centers, which is one reason to bring in a guy like Stastny, because you can take centers and move them to the wing. He said a lot of times you take wings and they can have them play center. They're just not going to be very good at it. And with a guy like Eric Halla, that is a question mark. Does he play center with Stastny on the wing, or does Stastny play center with Halla on the wing?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I think Stastny will for sure be a center. And when it comes to Halla, you could either, it depends on what you're going to do with Cody Eakin, I think. If you think Cody Eakin is your legit third line center, then you keep him there. You put Halla on the wing. And then you've got to figure out between Tatar and Tuck, or possibly Bobby Ryan, who's going to play on the second and third lines as your wingers. You've got to figure that out. You've got to make a decision at some point. And it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out in camp, because you're going to have Alex Tuck, who should take another step in the right direction and solidify himself as a top six winger. But if there's a logjam with Bobby Ryan, with Tomáš Tatar, with Eric Halla, maybe Tuck has to stay on the third line. I don't know. But then you look at all those things and you start to say, well, if you're talking about Alex Tuck and maybe Bobby Ryan and maybe Tomáš Tatar having to play third line minutes, you realize just how deep this team is when it comes to forwards. So it's not necessarily a bad thing.
You know, when McPhee was talking about Stastny, he also mentioned some comments about that it's hard to get goals and score points on that when you don't necessarily have the right people around you. So it to me, what I took out of that was, it's like, don't just look at Stastny's numbers from last year, because he had 53 points. 16 goals, 37 assists. But I think what he was saying was he could have done better or had more points if he was on a better line, like a William Karlsson did last year or some of the guys with the Vegas Golden Knights. So sometimes people just look at numbers, and those can be misleading. If you're set up to succeed, you have a lot better chance of succeeding than if you're set up with people that maybe it doesn't work right, or you don't have as much talent or depth on the team, and you're not set up to succeed. So I think that McPhee brought Stastny in here thinking that he's going to have better numbers and he's going to revert back to the player that they think he is. But what do you guys think about the contract? Because they are paying him a lot of money.
They are paying him a lot of money, but they have a lot of money. And so it's not as if this is going to preclude them from other free agents. It's not going to get in the way of an Erik Karlsson deal. And you may be more hesitant or reticent about the money 3 years from now than you would be at this point.
Yeah, and that's kind of the beauty of the fact that it's a three-year deal, because in 3 years you can walk away from Paul Stastny. You don't have to worry about the cap counting against you or anything like that. I mean, if he doesn't fit into your plans year four, you don't have to worry about it. It's fine. And you know, when it comes to bringing on potentially other free agents, if you're trading for Karlsson, bringing Bobby Ryan in, they have the cap space to do it this year. They'll have the cap space to do it next year and years from now. So long as, you know, McPhee doesn't make any mistakes when it comes to free agents. And when it comes to restricted free agents and handing out contracts, it'll be interesting to see how all this stuff kind of affects William Karlsson and what he's offered and what he is going to sign for. But I don't necessarily think that Paul Stastny's contract is going to really have a negative effect on William Karlsson's. What you do want to pay attention to or worry about is Erik Karlsson coming in, how much money he's going to command, which is going to be north of $11 million per, and then Bobby Ryan's $7.25 million against the cap as well.
And then don't forget about other guys on that restricted list, guys like Colin Miller, Shea Theodore, that you certainly feel like might be part of the future. Obviously, Shea Theodore could be going the other way if there's a trade. But if not, those guys are people that are going to have to be taken care of in the next couple of weeks.
And that's the thing, too, is if Karlsson comes in and Ryan comes in, there will be guys that are on this team that were on this team that played a part going back to Ottawa. I'm not Shea Theodore's name has been there. Colin Miller's name's been there. Cody Eakin, I saw a report the other day. His name's there. So you're going to be sending salary there too. So you don't necessarily have to worry too much about William Karlsson. William Karlsson's going to be taken care of. Will Carrier is going to come cheap. So it's not necessarily that big of a deal. They've got the space. They've got the right guy handling the cap space too. I think it'll be just fine.
Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Wishing everybody out there a happy 4th of July. What about the Ryan Reeves contract? I'm glad to see Ryan Reeves back. He seems like he's a very positive influence in the locker room. He's a cut-up, and he's one of those jokesters and that the teammates all seem to like in that. Any surprise at all about the money he got? Because there were some people that weren't even sure if he was going to stay on the team, let alone get, almost $2.75 million.
Yeah, it's a great deal for Ryan Reeves. And George McPhee really liked him. In his press conference, he had said a really great quote that he keeps the flies off the honey. And they said they wanted to go out and get him and have him around because some teams were starting to play the Golden Knights in a manner in which the Knights didn't like so much. And they wanted to have him around. But it's another one of those cases where there's the money to pay him now. Mm-hmm. There's probably not the money to pay him year three, year four, year five. And his role may be less necessary or be able to be filled by someone else come 2 years or 3 years from now. So I think it's a good deal both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ryan Reeves had a number, and he took 2 years as opposed to three. And it really, like you said, it's really not going to matter. It's not going to count that much against the cap when in 3 years Ryan Reeves isn't a part of this team, because maybe Will Carrier is taking a step. Maybe some of the young guys that you bring in to fill that fourth line, energetic, big bruiser type role, they come and they blossom and they become their own. So, yeah, it's fine. And, you know, there's always value at the trade deadline in a year and a half to maybe move a Ryan Reeves. If there's a team that's constantly getting beat up in the Eastern Conference or whatever it is, you can probably unload him. And if you do it for a couple of picks, whether or not they're high rounds or not, you still get something out of him.
All right, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, Frank Harness, Clayton Hamilton, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman here in the studios. Still lots to get to. We're going to talk about some of the Golden Knights that have departed and a lot of other free agent movements and things that are going around in the league. It's a special 4th of July edition for you here. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for the Golden Knights. Welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Wishing everybody out there a happy 4th of July. Remember, you might not want to be blowing off those illegal fireworks this year. Supposedly, they're really doing a crackdown. Well, it seems to me that I hear that every year in this town. Frank Harness, Clayton Hamilton, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman. Little Golden Knights talk and other NHL talk for you as well. Thanks for joining us here on this holiday. I hope you're enjoying your barbecue or whatever you're doing out there. Before we get into some of the other big free agents, we do have a couple guys that will be leaving the Golden Knights. Lucas Spezza, we don't know where he's going to be going, but we know he won't be back. But, of course, the two big names, James Neal and David Perron.
Yeah, both of those guys on to other opportunities. And when you think about James Neal, when we talked with George on Sunday, he had said they were still talking to James Neal. They had made an offer. He did not confirm what that was, but most speculation was 5 years, $25 million, and James Neal gets a little bit more to go to Calgary.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't know that that was the offer, because I think if that was the offer, James Neal probably would have accepted it if it was 5 years. I think, especially since he accepted a five-year deal with Calgary, when you convert the money down to what he made in Calgary versus what he would have made here with no income tax, he probably would have made more money here on a $5 million deal over 5 years. I think that you're looking at 3 years max. I think George offered him three and James wanted five, and that's why he's not a Golden Knight.
Any surprise that he went to Calgary? He said that he wants to win a Stanley Cup, and he thinks Calgary has just as good a chance as anybody else out there right now with some of the young talent and the other things that they do have going on. I think Calgary's got some good talent, but I don't think there is a setup right now for the Vegas is the Vegas Golden Knights are.
I mean, you got Matthew Tkachuk, you've got Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan. Those are all really good young players. You know, you make the trade Dougie Hamilton for Noah Hanifin. That definitely improves your back end. Mark Giordano is a really good defenseman, and they've got Mike Smith in goal, who I think really solidifies that position for them. If they could ever figure out how to play defense and not allow a ton of goals and get timely goaltending, they'll probably be a decent team. And when you look at, you know, the division, and you've got your big three, right? It's been the big three for a while. You've got Los Angeles, you've got Anaheim, you've got San Jose. Then you throw the Vegas Golden Knights into the mix, who aren't looking to regress. They're looking to get better. I think it's going to be really difficult for Calgary to kind of make some moves and make up some ground. But then again, you know, San Jose had John Tavares in their plans. They didn't get him. I don't think that they're necessarily a better team than they were last year. They're getting older. They're getting slower. And you can say the same thing about the LA Kings bringing in Ilya Kovalchuk. I don't know how that helps them speed-wise, and the Anaheim Ducks really haven't done anything in free agency. So I see at least two of those three teams taking a step back. Vegas can take a step forward. Maybe Calgary can make a jump. Maybe James Neal is that guy that can, you know, score you 25, 30 goals. But I don't know that he's going to make that team exponentially better. I think that their young core is going to be the reason they make the playoffs or make a run, not necessarily James Neal.
Can Edmonton jump back in that mix if they play like people thought they were going to this year? We saw flashes of it here and there. Or do they have to get rid of Lucic to just bring some chemistry and everything into the locker room? Because it kind of looks like that's not going to happen.
It depends on whether or not Lucic can become a player in this league that actually does something. He is not... I mean, we said that deal was going to look really bad come year three or four. It looks bad come year two. I mean, really, it's not very good. And, you know, with Milan Lucic, he's a big guy, but he's got to figure out a way to get faster. And it's really difficult as you get older to get faster, but he's got to come up with something. He's got to, whether it be conditioning, whether it be figuring out what the right fit is for him, Milan Lucic needs to be better. But the Edmonton Oilers also need help on the back end. They need to better defense, and their goaltending needs to be better. If Cam Talbot rebounds, I think they'll be okay. I don't know if they're going to jump from one of the worst teams in the league to into the playoffs, but they seem to do that 2 years ago, so why couldn't they do it now?
Yeah, you know, they make the playoffs every other year, Frank. But if you look at Calgary, at least there's something for them to build on. That they were in the hunt really till the last few days about trying to get into the playoffs. The question is, does James Neal make you 5 or 6 points better over the course of the season to maybe sneak in and compete for a seventh or an eighth slot? But you know, I have to agree with Ryan about the contract in that I think that James Neal and his people probably thought that there was a longer deal and more money out there than what they're proved to be, and we sort of thought maybe he would head back east. There were thoughts about whether he would go to someplace like Florida or maybe someplace like Pittsburgh. Could there be a reuniting with him in Nashville? And I think at the end of the day that this was probably the longest and biggest contract that he was offered.
Yeah, and I look at James Neal's situation and I say to myself, you know what? Get as much term and money as you can get right now. There will be value in James Neal after this contract as a one-year deal, $2 million, $1 million, $1.5 million on a cup contender to take you to that next step. So I don't necessarily think he has to chase the cup right now. I think that if he can, if he can stay in shape, if he can keep moving in the right direction, if he can continue to put up points, score goals, there'll probably be a market for him on a contender once this deal's over for him to chase that cup.
You also heard George McPhee talk about how GMs in the past were giving those 5 and 6 year deals out to veteran players, and the trend now seems to be more along the 3 year line. And so for him to get the term of 5, it's something he probably jumped at.
Yeah, and interesting too, because I'm wondering right now, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, do I go to the sportsbook and put a flyer on the Calgary Flames to make it to the Stanley Cup final? Because Neal has been in the final the last 2 years with Nashville and Vegas. Maybe he just chases the runner-up role for the Stanley Cup these days.
Well, I don't think that you put it on them to win it, because the last time something like this happened, it was Marian Hossa, who was with the Penguins and lost. Then he was with the Red Wings and lost. Then he went to Chicago and won. So really, your 2018-19 Stanley Cup champions are the Calgary Flames. Thanks, James Neal.
All right, so we don't even have to worry about season 2 then for the Golden Knights.
No, already done.
It was not, season 1 was good. Unfortunately, couldn't get it done in season 2 because the Flames are your Stanley Cup champions. Wonder what James Neal is going to do with that trophy when he's running around with it. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. All right, so James Neal, one of the beloved people, and quite honestly, I will always be a fan of his because he was a professional in the locker room. Some of the things that were heard about him being a little bit surly or something like that, he always spoke to the media, even on days that he didn't have to, a lot of the optional skates and that. And you can argue, and I believe this in my mind, maybe some people will disagree, if it wasn't for James Neal's goal in Dallas to start off the season, and then Arizona right after that, and the start that him and Marc-Andre Fleury, the two veterans on this club, helped get this team off to, start believing in themselves and get that confidence, I don't know if we have the season we had last year without Neal and Marc-Andre Fleury, who, of course, is staying around, and I hope he's around here and plays the rest of his career with the Golden Knights. But without James Neal and the game-winning goals and the heroics that he did at the start of the season, I think you can argue that last season is completely, or at least vastly, different than what it ended up being.
Yeah, probably. I mean, probably.
The thing that struck me about James Neal that was different than his reputation coming in is that his willingness and sort of want to be just one of the guys. And, you know, you sort of think about a lot of people in Canada, at least in the media, were talking about how this team needs a captain and it should be James Neal automatically. But James Neal, to me, he was more one of the guys than he was one of the leaders out front. You think about him going down to Cabo with a lot of the younger guys. You see outings all around town that he's out just with the guys. And I thought that was one of the strengths of James Neal, is that he didn't separate himself from the group. He was a major part of the group.
Yeah, what's funny about that is I don't necessarily think James Neal is a bad teammate. I just think the perception around James Neal is that he doesn't like the media, and the media has a really hard time with that. So they get angry about it, and then they make up these storylines about how James Neal isn't a nice guy and he's a me first type guy. He's a me first type guy when it comes to talking and answering dumb questions from the media. Absolutely. But when it comes to his teammates, I think he goes to battle up and down the ice and just wants to genuinely win and be a part of a team. I think James Neal's a great teammate, and you know, sometimes athletes don't want to talk to the media. It's totally fine. It's okay.
And again, I want to throw this in too. James Neal was there some of the times when he didn't have to talk to the media, and he still did. But the media always expects accountability, and they want to ask the players questions. Well, what James Neal doesn't, maybe some of the media doesn't like, he also expects accountability. And if you ask him something stupid, he calls you out on it. And that's what some media guys don't like.
Well, that's the problem, right? Because everybody wants to ask the dumb questions, but nobody wants to be called out when a question is stupid. Like, nobody does. You know, that's one of the hard things about going into a locker room and asking these guys after they got their you know, the doors blown off them 8-0, what went wrong? I mean, they know exactly what went wrong. Like, it's a tough spot to be in, and you don't want to be reprimanded for asking a question. But sometimes it happens, because guess what? These guys have pride. They don't like to lose. And if they did something that really cost their team the game, they're not going to be happy about it. You like, if you screw something up at work and somebody comes to your locker room or comes to your office and says, hey, why'd you screw that up? Are you going to be excited to talk to them? Are you going to be like, yeah, no, you know what? I'm glad you asked that question. I'll tell you why I screwed up and why I'll be better next time. Nobody wants to do that. These guys are different. But no one seems to understand that.
Yeah, and by the way, when they screw up, it's cameras all over the place, and it's in front of like 20,000 screaming fans live in that. So they already know what happened. They hear the reaction and everything, and then they have to go over it again and again. But you ask one thing that's stupid, and they look at you and go, are you out of your mind? Did you watch the game? Did you see something? And all of a sudden people are, oh, why are you calling me out? Mm-hmm. Well, you just called me out. So, you know, sometimes what comes around goes around. All right, so James Neal's gone. I wish him all the best. I think he was a consummate professional. He almost won a Stanley Cup in Nashville. He came closer with the Vegas Golden Knights. Maybe he gets it someday. That being said, I will not be cheering for Calgary, because I will still be cheering for the Vegas Golden Knights. How about David Perron? Perron goes back to St. Louis. He was comfortable there. We knew that at the end of last season, he wrote that beautiful piece when Marc-Andre Fleury talked to him. He wasn't necessarily crazy about coming to Vegas, but then he came here and he did fall in love with the team. I think he's going back to someplace where he's comfortable. And didn't we kind of see this in the playoffs there when he was a healthy scratch in a couple games? And maybe he wasn't a completely healthy or whatever, but David Perron is another guy. I wish him all the best. And I remember on the exit day, that last day that they had the meetings on Friday, when he was talking to the media, and he said, look, I'm not looking to break the bank here, but I want something fair and something that can take care of my family for years down the road. And that, I think he got that in St. Louis, and maybe 4 years is a little bit different than three. Maybe the money's a little bit more than Vegas wanted to pay, but I think it's a good contract for him and St. Louis, and maybe a little bit more than Vegas wanted to offer.
Yeah, we feel like you probably was disappointed in whatever that offer was from Vegas to not make it happen. And you think about when people sometimes speak through their agent, and his agent had tweeted out that he was offered a contract, but he's now being forced to look at other opportunities. And I think when you use that word, he's now forced, that was their agent's way of saying that we're really not happy with the term or with the money that we've been given, and we are going to move on. And so we sort of saw that coming once his agent tweeted that out.
Yeah, I saw a tweet, and I'm not sure if it was four or five teams, but the tweet was basically, David Perron has played for four teams, and the last contract that he signed was with the St. Louis Blues. So it's not like this is a definite guarantee that David Perron's going to play all 4 years in St. Louis. The last time he signed a long-term deal with St. Louis, it ended up being a very well-traveled deal for David Perron, unfortunately. But I do think David Perron meant what he said when he talked about Vegas wanting to stay here. But again, I don't think George McPhee was ready to commit to 4 years, because you have to understand that in year three and four, David Perron's job will be challenged by the guys that have been drafted. And if you can save money at a position and make your team better in doing so, you do it. So you're not going to really have great leverage trying to trade David Perron when you know that his trade value is going to be super low, because you've got a guy on an entry-level deal that just beat him out for his job. So what do? You say 3 years or nothing. Like, I'm sorry, we're going to have guys that are ready to play in this league in 3 years. They're going to take your job. So you've got 3 years here, or chase term somewhere else. And that's what he did.
Does Perron and the other moves that St. Louis has made put them back in the mix as a potential not just playoff contender, but a Stanley Cup contender, because that's what everybody wants to be. I think losing Carter Hutton's a big loss for them, but you're not going to pay two goalies starting goalie money. But I do think Perron helps them out a little bit. But here's a team that it seemed like last year made some moves, and it seemed like they gave up, and the team darn near made the playoffs anyhow. I do think they have some heart here, and I think St. Louis is maybe flying under the radar a little bit. I like some of the moves they've made.
Yeah, I mean, bringing in Ryan O'Reilly, I think, definitely helps. You've got a center that, I mean, is really good two-way. He's kind of built for the Western Conference and how games are played here, especially in that Central Division. But to be honest with you, Ryan O'Reilly is always going to be a question mark to me. I mean, the guy is just an enigma. Everyone else was the problem in Colorado, and he gets moved to Buffalo, and then everyone else was the problem in Buffalo, and then he gets moved now. So I don't know. I mean, he's a good player, really good two-way hockey player, not a top 10 player in the league. So it's fine. But I think the Blues will probably be right around what they were last year, because I still don't believe in Jake Allen and his ability to play as a number one goalie throughout an entire NHL season and then get you into the playoffs.
You think that they're one of those teams that's going to be hovering anywhere that they finish between 7 and 12, you're not going to be surprised.
No, not at all. And then you also factor in David Perron. If you bring him in because you think that he's going to be able to help you in the playoffs, I'm not killing the guy for having a bad playoffs with the Golden Knights, but I am killing the guy for his entire career numbers in the playoffs. They're not good. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it happens. It could just be circumstantial. It could also be getting to the playoffs with the St. Louis Blues and playing the LA Kings and Jonathan Quick when he was unreal for his entire career. It could be that, but he doesn't put up the numbers that he puts up in the regular season in the playoffs. That's a problem.
It certainly is. And you think about when the ice sort of gets smaller and how David Perron exists. And I think that the Golden Knights sort of got a look into his future late in the year, when there was the times that he would switch from that second line to the third line. And you think about what he's going to be as a player in maybe the fourth or the fifth year, and maybe having to change what his role is. And they got a preview of what that would be on the third line, and it didn't go nearly as smoothly as when he was down on two. And I think that might have been a red flag or a cause for caution that leads you to that 3 years or nothing.
Yeah, my main question with David Perron is this: in 2 years, who's going to be better, Perron or Suzuki?
Mm-hmm. And I guess time will be told, but I think it's probably going to be Nick Suzuki. By the way, we'll hear from Nick Suzuki at the end of the show here as we wrap it up. I got a chance to talk to him at development camp here. We got a few minutes left here. We're talking about David Perron, and we touched on it earlier in the first segment there, but we do have to talk about John Tavares and him going to Toronto. Is that the biggest move that happened out there? Is Toronto now a Stanley Cup one of the favorites with the moves they've made? They've got some good young players, and Tavares going back home, I don't think anybody can fault him for that. And a lot of money, but a pretty decent deal, I think, for both sides here. $11 million a year, 7 years, $77 million. I think both sides are happy with this contract.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that he left money on the table, because I think there were reports that San Jose offered $13 million per year. But then when you look at cost of living in L.A., I mean, it's ridiculous, especially up in that area. It's one of the most expensive places to live. So, you can argue how much money he's actually making. But I think when you boil it down, John Tavares wanted to go home, but he wanted to go home to a really, really good hockey team. And at least at the forward position, at least up front, they are a fantastic hockey team. You got Tavares, Austin Matthews, and Nazem Kadri as your top three centers. I mean, that is scary, scary good, especially when you factor in Nazem Kadri has all the trust that Mike Babcock wants in a third-line center. He can shut people down. He's a pest. He's annoying, but he can also score goals. And then you look at the wings. You've got Nylander. You've got Marner. You've got Marleau. I mean, you've got guys that can just fill the net. However, Toronto, if they lack anything, it's the ability to play defense. They don't have it. They're not very good at it. Frederick Anderson was left out to dry. His numbers were really good because he was facing like 70 shots a game, but he was also facing like 70 shots a game. That's got to come down. They've got to get better defensively if they're going to be legitimate Stanley Cup contenders. I don't think they are next year, but I think in 2 or 3 years, especially if they can bring in or develop a defenseman, they're going to be really good.
The interesting part to me goes to those wingers, and you mentioned, you know, Marner and Marlowe and Nylander, Hyman. What combination does Mike Babcock go? Which wingers go with which centers? And it'll be fun to see him play with that during their training camp and during the few games that they play during the preseason, and even really over the first couple of weeks, trying to find those combinations that he's most comfortable with.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how the Toronto media and the fans in Toronto deal with a stretch at the beginning of the year where they're trying to figure all that out, because it's not going to be seamless. You are taking something out of the Toronto lineup in Tyler Bozak, in Leo Komarov, in James Van Riemsdyk, these core pieces that have been a part of what has gone right for Toronto, and you're replacing it with John Tavares. Now, I'm not suggesting they're worse off for doing that, but I am suggesting that there are pieces that are going to be missing and things that are going to feel different, and there will be an adjustment period for Toronto.
All right, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Once again, wishing everybody a very happy 4th of July. I'm just trying to decide if I feel bad for Barry Trotz right now or if I'm glad that he's getting paid. But with Tavares going, I'm sure he was hoping that was going to be a piece of the puzzle that he was going to have in play for him.
He's got a cup. It's about money now.
Well, there you go. Well, then he should be happy. All right, we're going to hear from Nick Suzuki. Had a chance to catch up with him at development camp. Real quick, want to throw this in. I saw him walking off the ice the second scrimmage day. A little kid had a jersey. Suzuki signs the jersey, takes a picture. Nick Haig comes walking by and says, "Oh, that's the cutest thing I've ever seen." So he signs a puck for the kid and gets a picture taken as well. Dylan Ferguson goes back to the locker room, comes out, and brings a stick for the kid. That kid made off like a bandit that day. Autographed stick, autographed jersey, pucks all over the place. Sometimes it's good to be a kid.
Sometimes.
Sometimes it is. All right. Enjoy your 4th of July. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for the Golden Knights in Las Vegas. Coming up next, we'll hear from Nick Suzuki at development camp. Have a great day.
Hi, this is comedy hypnotist Mark Savard, and you're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, your home for Vegas Golden Knights hockey.
Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show here with Nick Suzuki. Nick, saw you on the ice today in the scrimmage out there with Reed Duke and Tyler Wong. It's a pretty good-looking line.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to play with them. I've been skating with them a lot, it seems, over the past year, so I think we've built some chemistry there, and it was good to play with those guys today.
Now, I remember last year in development camp, you said you were working on some things. One of the things that it looks like you've worked on, you've gotten a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. What's your workout regimen been like? Has that been something you've been emphasizing on improving on?
Yeah, that's definitely been a point of emphasis for me. I'm usually in the gym 5 days a week now, and been working with Gary Roberts. Him and my trainer have kind of been working together to help me out, and I think it's been working great, and I just got to keep proving that I can get bigger and stronger. And that also shows off with my skating, I think, too. And I think I've came back faster, so hopefully I can show that to them.
How did the season go last year for you? It looked like you had a really good season in Owen Sound.
Yeah, I think my season personally went really well. Pretty disappointed to not get the World Junior team, but it's just motivation for me. And I think I took that as a good motivation and came back and played really well. And then for my team, I think we underachieved a little bit. But at the end of the year, we really came together and played really well. And I thought we had a great playoff run. So overall, I thought the year was pretty good.
I noticed out there in the first period, you and Eric Branstrom were going at it a little bit. Good-natured, but a little physicality out there. Is it kind of fun out there with some of the guys that you've got to know in a little bit? When you do get to mix it up, good-natured, but still, you're competitive and you want to win the game.
Yeah, I think that kind of started last year. We were battling a lot, and it's continued on to this year. He's a really competitive guy. He likes to battle out there, and he doesn't want to lose any puck battles. So you got to compete as hard as he does. So I like competing against him. He's a great player, and if you can do well against him, I think you're pretty good.
How many requests for your bobblehead did you get from all your family and friends?
yeah, we got a few requests. We've been trying to get them out to people. I think we still have a bit left, but I don't know. It's up to my parents, really, what they want to do with them.
What was that like, having a bobblehead night at your age? Was it a little bit surreal or something like that, or was it just something you had a lot of fun with?
Yeah, it was really cool. I got the call before the season started that I was going to have a bobblehead for my GM, and it was just a huge kind of opportunity, and it was just amazing to be a part of, and not many people get to have a bobblehead, and for them to pick me, it was really special.
On a serious note, you're in development camp right now, and when it comes to development camp, nobody's looking to make the team out of this, but what are you looking to get out of this development camp, and what are you looking on to improve to be able to join the Golden Knights as soon as possible?
Yeah, I think what I'm getting out of it is just what management and the coaches are thinking of me right now, what they want me to improve. Like we have our final meetings here soon, so I'm really going to see what they want me to do. But I think I've done good this camp. I think I've put a good foot forward. So I just want to keep developing and hopefully make the team one day.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because I was watching, like I said, I noticed you out there with Tyler Wong. The one time you were also out there with Haig and Whitecloud at the same time. And I was in my mind thinking, this could literally be five people with the Golden Knights someday.
Yeah, I think all of us want to make it there. Everyone's doing their best to try to show the staff and management what they're good at. And for all of us to be out there, I think we're moving the puck around really well and just more of a veteran lineup going out there for the shift. So, yeah, if all of us can make there one day, that would be amazing.
Nick, well, thanks a lot. Enjoy Vegas. Enjoy the rest of the camp here and look forward to your upcoming season and look forward to seeing you in the Golden Knights jersey soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot.